This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Everybody get your roll on. I know shorty and she doesn't want no slow song. Had a man last year, life gone.
All right, Nathan Rourke will join us in about 5 minutes. He is an absolute superstar quarterback for the BC Lions. And he's breaking records. It feels like every week he's breaking records. And, you know, the Lions are off to a great start. You got Winnipeg dominating. They're still undefeated in the West, but the Lions are in second in the West. And his completion rate is off the charts. He's already accumulated 21 touchdowns over the weekend. He threw for 5, ran for another one. 24. He's from Oakville. Canadian quarterback, yeah. Dominating the Canadian Football League. We've been waiting for this for a long time.
He's like the highest-ranked Canadian QB in a long time, is he not?
Oh, there's no one close this early in the year. Yeah. Nothing close.
The list, Frankie, of Canadian quarterbacks who dominated the CFL is very short.
Right.
I mean, you have to be like my dad's age to remember Russ Jackson, who was a really good one. But there haven't, there have been a few guys that have tried. But it's the toughest position to develop, right? And yeah. This guy, Nathan Rourke, and heck, he's got a brother, Curtis, also playing in NCAA Division I down at the same school Nathan went to. I think he's a few years younger. These guys, I mean, Nathan's something else. Curtis looks like he's got a chance, but they're rare breeds.
Yeah, man. Like he again grew up in Oakville, was playing high school ball there, and then for a senior year in high school went down to Alabama. So like you're right in the heart of Southern football.
Yeah.
And then ends up going to college at Ohio. And
but didn't even get any D1 offers. Like had to go to junior college, small junior. It's been a tough road, man, to this point.
It's got to be a tough journey for a Canadian guy to get in with a legitimate D1 school in the States, right? Like you're not going to get the looks that someone from Michigan is going to get or even down south is going to get.
Especially at that position. Yeah, exactly. Like Canadians, there's been a long history of Canadians that are, linebackers, running back, D-line, cornerbacks or whatever. Like, that's pure athleticism and skill sets and an ability to read play, football IQ, all that. But quarterback's such a different beast.
Yeah.
Such a different beast. And, there's a stigma against, Canadian quarterbacks because there just isn't any history to it.
Right. Jesse Palmer, we've got one guy playing in the NFL,
right?
We've had one Canadian quarterback that's born and raised in Canada and developed in Canada that's played in the NFL, and that's Jesse Palmer.
End of conversation. Yeah, and now Palmer is much more well-known for what he's done off the field than he ever did on the field, in the NFL. So Nathan Rourke will join us here in just a few moments. We'll get back into this Kevin Durant report. I guess it's Shams Charania who's reporting it of The Athletic, that KD had a sit-down with the owner of the Nets, placed an ultimatum on the table. It's either me or Steve Nash and Sean Marks, the coach and the GM. I'm sure every owner, that's a dream come true, facing down a superstar who wants out, and
who you're paying a ton of money.
You just locked him in. You paid him a fortune to recover from an Achilles injury he suffered with a different team. you still paid him.
Yeah.
And he gave him all those accolades, all that money, all that fame. Not that he needed more of it in Brooklyn, but, he was supposed to change everything for the Nets. He and Kyrie.
He's going to change something for the Nets, that's for sure. Just not going to be in a positive way, because either he's going or the GM and the coach are going, and I have a feeling it's going to be he's the one who's going. Like there's
more than likely.
You can't just let this guy run your show.
Unless the coach and GM step down, but why would they do that for Kevin Durant? Why would you do that?
Especially after that. Like, what are you going to be like, oh, okay, I guess you're right, Kevin. I'll resign. Like,
right.
I don't know. I think as an owner, too, you kind of lose credibility. Like, whoever you're going to bring in now is going to be under the premise that, okay, Durant kind of goes to the owner, and that's how the team gets operated.
Look, that to me is the problem here, Frankie. Like, can you imagine a player in Toronto contacting Larry Tannenbaum directly without going through Masai Ujiri? It would never happen because Masai Ujiri would never let it happen, because it would never, even enter a player's mind that the guy not to talk to is Masai Ujiri. And that's about the tone you set. And I'm not saying Sean Marks deserves this, but, Sean Marks is a part of this. The fact that he's allowed this to happen, maybe there was nothing he could have done. Maybe he's a complete victim here. But I'll tell you, it wouldn't happen in Toronto. It just wouldn't happen with Masai Ujiri at the switch. There'd be no Kevin Durant sidling up to Larry Tannenbaum's front door and asking for Nick Nurse and Bobby Webster to be fired.
Right. And the report wouldn't even get out that the ultimatum was placed on the table. you know, it would, like, what would get out is we are committed to moving on from Kevin Durant.
Right.
Yeah. It wouldn't be, well, I'm thinking about it. You know, maybe Nick and Messiah can find a different address. You know, that it just wouldn't happen up here. But we'll get into it a little bit later on. Russell Wilson getting booed back in Seattle. Pete Rose in the booth in Philly. It went exactly how you would expect Pete Rose in the booth in Philly to go. But Nathan Rourke, we've been talking about him a lot, man. The Lions are 6-1. You know, they just won big over the weekend. And his stats, Nathan Rourke's stats this year, are simply off the charts. He's already thrown for 21 touchdowns. He's already rushed for 5 touchdowns. He's got almost 2,500 yards in the air already. And they played 7 games. And he's a Canadian quarterback. And, again, he's an Oakville boy. And he joins us here on Overdrive for the first time. Here's Nathan Rourke, starting QB of the BC Lions. What's up, Nathan?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. We've been obviously talking a lot about different performances of yours over the course of the year, but how about this weekend where your completion rate was off the charts, you throw for 5 TDs, you run for a touchdown. How would you grade your own performance this past weekend?
Yeah, I'm not big on the grading system. It was very fun to be out there, and we definitely executed the way that we're capable of doing so, and great team win, and proud to be a part of it.
Okay, I'll give you an A+. I'll grade it. I'll give you an A+. It was off the charts.
Very tough grader here too. So that's high marks here.
I generally am. But yeah, I mean, you've really taken the whole league and the country by storm. Is there pressure that comes with being known as the Canadian quarterback in the Canadian Football League?
Yeah, but I think that a lot of the pressure comes, you know, externally. You know, I think that certainly what I'm focused on is what we have here in the locker room and winning games for the Lions. And you know, it certainly has been a transition to deal with all of that outside noise. But at the end of the day, that's exactly what it is. It's noise and trying to, you know, keep focused on the right things here.
So, Nathan, take us through the beginnings of this incredible journey you've been on. I mean, the man you were just talking to, Brian Hayes, has a big Green Bay Packers helmet in his background. If you're watching on TV, I mean, I know the watching the Packers early in your life was sort of influential, or very influential, on you becoming the quarterback you've become. Win Brian Hayes' heart with your Packer love, please.
Yeah, I was a big Packers fan growing up. Still root for the Packers when they're on TV, and Brett Favre was the guy for me. He was the guy that made me want to play quarterback. I wore number 4 growing up to try to emulate him. And, you know, obviously growing up, when you start to learn a little bit more about football, you understand that you probably don't want to take, you know, all the risks and throw all the interceptions that he did. But he was such an entertaining player to watch. He had so much fun. It was very easy to see that he was enjoying himself and having fun with his teammates. And that's something that I really want to make sure that translates to my game, is that I'm having fun with my teammates and fun to watch as well. So big Packers fan, always will be, and the guy that they have right now at quarterback, number 12, isn't too bad either. So been having a fun time watching him too.
Yeah, he's done pretty well, that's for sure. And I'm with you on everything you said about Favre. Like, you got 21 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. Like, Favre, that ratio would not hold up for Brett Favre. He'd probably have about 15 picks by now. But also tough as nails, a guy that played through everything and literally played every single week. Do you feel like that's possible in modern football, to be an Iron Man, and how important is that for you to chase?
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible. I think that players like Tom Brady are showing people, quarterbacks and fans alike, that, you know, that type of longevity can be achieved. But it's going to take a whole bunch of dedication. You know, the amount of resources and time spent to just taking care of your body on top of all the other commitments that you have during the week in terms of, preparing mentally and physically. You know, it's a big sacrifice, but if that's what you want to do, I think it's definitely something that can be attained and has to be attained by, the all-time greats.
Nathan, I imagine you're pretty focused with the Lions in the season and trying to win a great cup, but you know, how much outside noise do you kind of hear about, you know, maybe getting some looks down south in the NFL, and how do you kind of balance that with, you know, staying focused on your season?
Yeah, it's not the easiest thing. I've you know, ever since I was, you know, watching Brett Favre highlights as a youngster, I dreamed about playing in the NFL. And but I also understand that the reality is that, you know, the NFL teams didn't come calling when I got out of college, and the BC Lions were a team that was willing to give me an opportunity, and I owe to them my focus and my attention. I owe my teammates that effort that I promised to give at the beginning of the year, and so my focus right now is on the team and winning games and being in the moment as best I can. We'll worry about that stuff in the off season when the season is done, and cross that bridge when we get there. But trying to just stay out of it as I can right now, and I don't want that to affect me mentally, because like I said, it is something that I've wanted a long time. I feel like it could be a distraction.
We're chatting with Nathan Rourke of the BC Lions. And you mentioned the Packers and your love for the Packers growing up. As an Oakville guy, Oakville could not be more in the middle of the Argos and the Ticats. Like, you could really lean both ways. It's probably right directly in the middle, Hamilton, Toronto. Shed some light on, you know, which way you were leaning when you were a kid.
Yeah, I was I was able to go to a whole bunch of Ticat games. I remember playing some house league games with the BMFA, the Burlington Minor Football Association, at Iverwind. So I played at Iverwind. I've watched games as a fan at Iverwind. I remember watching some games at the Rogers Center, watching the Argos play. And so I got a good glimpse of both. I was actually, because I have some roots in BC and I have some family out there, I was always cheering for the Canucks rather than the Leafs, probably because there were so many Leafs fans around. I just wanted to be different, and I also just cheered for the Lions. So I was always a BC Lions fan growing up. I remember watching in 2011 when Travis Lule and G. Roy Simon led them to a Grey Cup championship in BC Place. I always thought that was really, really cool that they were able to win it in their home stadium. And in terms of that, I was always, in terms of the CFL, I was always rooting, hoping that the team out west would win.
That's a good. That works out pretty well for you then. If you're
playing
for the BC Lions, you don't want to admit you're an Argos fan or a Ticats fan.
There you go.
Yeah, no, that worked out well. We're chatting with Nathan Rourke, and in terms of your pursuit of pro football and even the NFL, like you know, with hockey forever, Canadian kids are playing to see each other, got to leave home, but they're generally leaving within their own province. You know, it's someone from Oakville going to Sudbury or Oakville going to Ottawa, you know, or whatever, Montreal going maybe to as far as to Halifax, but that's about it. Your senior year in high school, you went to Alabama, all the way down to the South, the deep South, to play football. How daunting was that task, and how much of a shock came with the lifestyle change?
Yeah, it was definitely different. It was definitely different on a whole bunch of different scales. You know, obviously, you know, the spotlight around football and athletics in general is just a little bit different. I always thought that academics was stressed more up here in Canada, for better or for worse. And down south, you know, athletics is a bigger thing. They really realize that you can, you know, earn a college scholarship down there through athletics. And so, you know, Thursday, Friday night games are, the entire community comes out and they come and support the team. And it's really an event down there. And so that was a bit of a change for sure. Not used to, you know, that much attention around high school sports. I remember back at Holy Trinity in Oakville, we would have Thursday and even Wednesday games at 2 o'clock in the afternoon with not many people in the stands. And it was just a little bit different to go down there, but it was what I wanted. That was the reason we went down there, was to try to, you know, get a better chance to get a Division I scholarship, just for that exposure, be in the college coach's recruiting backyard, and so that they could get a chance to meet me, meet my family, and hopefully get some kind of connection there in the end of it.
So, Nathan, we were just talking about how, you know, the list of Canadians who've been successful as pro football quarterbacks, you know, in the NFL, it's Jesse Palmer, and it ends there. In the CFL, it's not particularly long either. I mean, you know, why is it so hard, and what was the hardest part for you in your journey to becoming what you've become?
You know, I don't know if the wacky journey that I've taken, the many stops that I've taken on my football journey, necessarily has to do with me being Canadian. You know, I thought that I was always down in the recruiting. I didn't get a scholarship out of high school, so I always felt like that was not because of my ability. It was just because of how late I ended up going. I only went down for 1 year. It's hard for people to really get a good evaluation of you. I went to JUCO. After that, was able to get a Division I scholarship to Ohio University. So, I never really thought that being a Canadian was a downside. It's unfortunate that, coming up here, that it is such a rarity with all the athletes that it seems like Canada is producing in football or otherwise, and that, quarterback isn't really something that we've had in a long time. I definitely didn't go the traditional route, but I definitely felt like I've always been proud to be Canadian, and I don't really exactly know why it's such a weird thing or a unique thing to be, but nevertheless, I'm proud about it and excited about all the possibilities that this could this could bring for the Canadian football and the CFL.
Nathan, I know you mentioned you're a big Brett Favre fan growing up, but when you watch the NFL now, is there a quarterback that kind of sticks out to you as someone you really like to watch, or you like what they're doing week to week?
Yeah, I mean, you look at all the guys that are out there, and you kind of see if you can take things from everybody. I've always admired Tom Brady for, the consistency of his game, the prolonged greatness. I think that's so hard to obtain in sports in general, but especially in pro sports. So I like to watch him and read about him and see things that he's doing for his body and longevity and all that kind of stuff. Obviously one of the guys that sticks out for me is Russell Wilson. I've always been admired in the way he plays the game, the way he balances throwing the ball as well as running the ball. Those are things that I try to take pride in as well, and he's done a really good job of, making a career being a mobile quarterback. I've always admired people like Drew Brees. I know he's not playing anymore, but he was somebody that I always admired from a leadership standpoint. I always thought he conducted himself in a manner that I always wanted to emulate on and off the field, the things that he did around the community for his teammates, just his work ethic. Those are things that I tried to take from him. So you try to watch the game now. I watch it kind of selfishly, trying to watch and see how I can get better and less of a fan nowadays, but definitely still keep my eyes on what's going on in the NFL.
We're chatting with Nathan Rourke. I'm sure your team collectively keeping your eyes on Winnipeg, and the Blue Bombers have dominated the CFL for years now. They're 9-0 to start the season. You guys are 6-1, though. You're not far behind them. You're currently second in the West. How do you feel about where your group is at and the likelihood that you guys can continue to contend with, a powerhouse in Winnipeg moving forward?
Yeah, I think, Winnipeg has done a tremendous job. Like I said, prolonged greatness in professional sports is extremely hard to come by, and they found a number of ways to win this year. They've won with, great defensive performances, great offensive performances, and then sometimes when one of those things is out of whack, their special teams comes out and really steps up, and that's just a sign of a really good team. So obviously they're at a level right now that we feel that we can get. We're not there yet, obviously. By the time that we, the game that we played them, I think in week five, they got after us, and so it was good for our football team, though. I think it was good to get a taste of that, something to chase after, and we look forward to playing them later in the season. This week we've got Calgary, another really good team that's been good for a very long time. Their only losses are to Winnipeg as well, and so we've certainly got our hands full with them. But we look forward to this challenge, and we can't wait for Saturday.
So Nathan, we were talking about Canadian quarterbacks. I'd be remiss not to ask you about another Rourke, your younger brother Curtis. Give us a scouting report on him and his pro prospects coming out of Ohio University.
Yeah, he's first of all, pretty cool to be able to have him at Ohio University, my alma mater, and to continue that pipeline has been pretty cool. We've got another actually Canadian there who just enrolled in January. So we've got three Canadian quarterbacks at Ohio in the last couple of years, and that's pretty cool, obviously, to have one in the family too. He's going into his redshirt sophomore year, so he'll have three more years of eligibility. The COVID year kind of helped him out there. He'll be this year. He'll be the starter this year, which we're really looking forward to watching him play. And he's a bit bigger than I am. He's taller than I am. He's definitely got the prototypical size and weight that the teams are looking for. I always thought he was more of a natural thrower of the football than I was growing up. Although I've never wavered in terms of challenging him for a race. I always thought that I had him in that area, but he's definitely what they're looking for at the next level in the NFL in terms of size, and he's got a big arm, and he's a bright kid. He's going to have a great year this year, and we're really looking forward to watching him play.
With Nathan Rourke. So what's the history here with the Rourke family, where everyone, you're just churning out quarterbacks and churning out, you know, potential pro athletes? You know, how did this all come to be? You were born in Victoria, but you grew up in Oakville. What am I missing out of Oakville, where these superstars are, you know, being born or not born, but raised and leading to great futures in football?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. My parents didn't really, I don't think they tried intentionally to do any of this, but they've just been incredibly supportive of my brother and I's dream. When I was in eighth or ninth grade, I told my parents that I wanted to play in the NFL, and it wasn't like they batted an eye. They just said, well, what can we do to support you? And that goes a long way. I really feel, you know, growing, you know, meeting people from different walks of life, you understand that you're among the lucky to be able to have both of your parents in your life. And my parents have been extremely supportive of me and my passion and my dream and of my time. I don't think without them, neither my brother nor I are in the position that we're in now.
Well, it's been an incredible ride, obviously, for you, and you have taken the CFL by storm this year, the whole country paying attention. They would be anyway, but the fact that you're Canadian, it's, you know, going to boost the profile and the spotlight that much more, and you're obviously handling it incredibly well. We wish you nothing but success, Nathan. We really appreciate you doing this. We'll be tracking you all year, and we'll have to catch up again down the road.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me.
You got it. Nathan Rourke, quarterback, BC Lions. That guy's got a future, man.
Man, he's well-spoken, hey?
He can handle the –
impressive,
like, it's
kid.
Not, it, very yeah. impressive. Yeah. Like, he's 24. He handled that interview. Not that we were grilling him or anything.
Nope.
But, man, he had an answer for everything. He had detail with everything. And, you know, Dave, as you mentioned, he's got a brother coming up, too, who could sling it. So, something's going on with the Rourkes in Oakville, man. They're churning out quarterbacks. What am I missing out there?
Yeah.
Been to Oakville a bunch. I don't remember hearing about football roots.
Yeah.
But there they are.
Yeah. But, you know, it's, you know, who knows what, you know, what was in the water or the Cheerios in the Rourke breakfast table. But, you know, when you listen to this kid, you read his story, you hear about, you know, how it all came about. It's, you know, how do you create internal drive? Like, this kid was driven to get where he got. And it was against all odds. Like, he goes down to that really small junior, really small prep school in Alabama, then goes to a junior college in Kansas that was super small. And only then does he get the scholarship offer from Ohio University, right? Which, you know, it's long, long road.
It's great. There's a great story in there, hey, for like parents of kids who play sports, more specifically hockey here in the GTA and the GTHL, and people think they need to get their kid on certain teams and stuff like that. Like, look where they found this guy. Like, they found him at small, obscure schools in the States that he, you know, he put himself down there. They found Leo Komarov in northern Estonia. Like, if you're a good enough player, they will find you when the time is right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Like, every team is desperate for good players, and if they can find the good players, they will invite the good players to join. And, you know, the BC Lions, they got something. I love this answer about, you know, full commitment, and he owes that to the Lions. They've given him this opportunity. You know, CFL fans, I don't know if they're going to be ecstatic with the amount of times the NFL came up, because I think it's abundantly clear, you know, he's got dreams of making it to the NFL, and based on what his history would tell us, I'm not betting against him.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to bet against him. At
least
not getting a crack at some point.
Let's be honest. You dream of playing in the NFL as a kid like that. Like, that should be your goal.
Well, it's not a shock, right? Essentially every player in the CFL dreams of playing in the NFL.
Right.
Maybe some have given up on it because they realize it's not going to happen. But at some point, they wanted to be there. And why wouldn't this guy? I mean, hey, you talk about a hot stock. You know, this is when you want to be selling yourself to the NFL when you are dominating the CFL.
For sure. Yep. And he is, like, his completion rate is off the charts. You know, like, that's the kind of thing that the NFL would be looking at, being like, man, he's not just running for everything. Like, he has legs. He is mobile. He is capable of moving. He's rushed for 5 touchdowns in 7 games. That's a substantial number. But he's – let me find his stats here. They're absurd. Like,
the other night, he was 34 for 37 against Edmonton.
He has missed 43 passes this year. He's got 230 attempts. He's completed 187 of them.
It's crazy.
Wow. That's a crazy completion rate. Like, that's – and this is not just, you know, quick posts or out of the backfield. Like, this guy's throwing the ball all over the park and connecting.
Yeah.
His stats are off the charts.
If it's Lou Marsh, Canadian Athlete of the Year today, is it Brooke Henderson or is it Nathan Rourke?
That is a great question. Because this is something we've never had to debate for the last, in my lifetime.
Yeah.
The idea of a Canadian quarterback in the Canadian Football League putting up these kind of numbers. He's still got a ways to go until we get to the finish line and into the playoffs. But if he continues, if he wins the MOP and, somehow they get to a great cup, he puts on a performance there, that'd be tough to beat, man. Like, Brooks had a great year, but that'll be difficult to beat for sure. All right, the Kevin Durant story came out today, according to Shams Charania, that KD has laid an ultimatum on the table for the owner of the Brooklyn Nets. We'll tell you about it. We'll get into it. What is the likely reaction down there? And we still got to get to the Pete Rose audio as well. We will play Pete Rose in the booth for the Phillies over the weekend. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Jay's back in action tonight. Yusei Kikuchi on the mound. Big series in Baltimore. That is a picture I did not expect to see of Dave Feschuk. Where did we find that stock photo?
I can't see it. How do I look?
It looks like you were still living in St. Catharines. It is. You're looking good, man. You're looking spry, Dave. But I guess we're having some technical issues with
Dave's
the camera. We'll get you back in there.
Ageless wonder, Dave Feschuk, man. He's looking good.
Vintage photographs up there, fellas?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
You know what that looks like? That looks like Dave Feschuk versus Kevin O'Neill days. That's
what
that looks like to me. It looks like when you're writing about Kevin
O'Neill.
Those
were good
Raptors
times.
Wasn't he the
best?
Used
to get a lot of late-night phone calls from Kevin O'Neill, man. Oh. Those were interesting conversations.
Man, remember his mouth?
Like, oh, man.
He was losing it. And it's like, we get it. It's pro sports, but there's some kids around. Can you please relax, Kevin?
He was an intense individual. Incredibly intense.
He was intense.
And wasn't easy to be around him at times, but he was actually – a good guy, but tough. He tried to turn basketball into football with a playbook heavy on defensive schemes that included the occasional tackle and a lot of physicality that didn't necessarily go with the NBA at the time. It was a tough mix.
Yeah, they were trying to win like 65-62, but didn't work so well. Anyway, this bombshell from Shams Charania of The Athletic reporting that Kevin Durant, the owner of the Nets, met and KD put an ultimatum on the table. Either trade me, or if you're going to keep me, the only reason I'm coming back or the only way I'll come back is if you get rid of Steve Nash, the coach, and Sean Marks, the GM. The chat about it, we're now joined by Alex Schiffer, Brooklyn Nets beat writer for The Athletic. Alex, why do you believe Kevin Durant decided to play this card?
First off, I just want to applaud you for transitioning from dudes' mouths to this news. That was brilliantly done. I couldn't do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that this has reached a point where the only way he'll come back is if they clean house, which is kind of crazy to me, given that, Kevin Durant has played a role essentially as GM the past few seasons and had influence on who the coach was hired. And I think reading between the lines a little bit, there hasn't been a huge trade market for him despite being an all-time great. And I think, is this a way to maybe re-energize the market a little bit and try to get a deal done given how slow this has gone?
Yeah, I kind of read it the same way. Like, I can't imagine the owner is even going to take this seriously. Like, there's, can you picture a scenario where the owner will actually follow through on this and call his bluff and fire Nash and Marks?
No. You know, Joe Tsai, the Nets owner, spoke to me September 2021, so roughly a year ago, and he called Sean Marks the best GM in the NBA, and he also got Steve Nash to co-invest with him as a co-owner of a professional lacrosse team that starts play, I think, this coming season, the Las Vegas Desert Dogs. So it's not like this is just a business relationship to him. I mean, he's got relationships with these guys outside of the Nets. And Sean Marks was named alternate governor, where if Joe Tsai can't make a meeting and his backup can't make a meeting, Sean Marks sits in. So he's tight with these guys. I don't see how it could get from that to a resignation letter or termination, given the way the working relationship has gone so far.
Alex, do you think this actually will re-energize the Kevin Durant trade market, or do you think this is one of those things now where other GMs are kind of hearing the circus music with this guy again?
I kind of feel like it might hurt the Kevin Durant trade market, just because if you're a GM and you know there's this huge return you need to give up to get him, are you going to give up every last asset, as Sean's story says Joe Tsai wants, and trade for a guy that just called for the firing of the last the guy in your position on the previous team in order to do so? I mean, I think, you know, again, the average tenure of a GM, I want to say, is like 3 years, so it's already a job you know, could have a short tenure when you get it. But, I mean, isn't that kind of greasing the wheels a little bit? So I don't know if this is going to help it, per se, just because maybe if there's a team that really wants him, maybe there's a way to get the Nets on a little bit of a lower ask or find a way to get a deal that previously wasn't there. But it's a lot to wrap my mind around, just because if I were a GM trying to trade for Kevin Durant right now, part of me would be like, ugh, I don't know now. Like I don't want to have a situation like he's leaving. So that's where my mind's at it with this.
Fair points, Alex. But I mean, hasn't Durant, with this, the release of this information, hasn't he put the Nets in an essentially a possible situation? Like if they don't trade him now, like he wants, is there any reasonable expectation that they could show up to camp and have anything approaching a functional basketball situation?
Well, that, to me, that's the question at heart, because again, we've seen something similar before with Carmelo Anthony wanting a trade out of Denver and then playing, you know, the first half of the year before being traded to the Knicks. That was a little over 10 years ago. But Carmelo Anthony did not say trade me or fire everybody beforehand, which makes it a little different. And I think also it's worth remembering that Kevin Durant's had two injuries that's cost him almost half the season the past 2 years. If you're the Nets, do you put him out there and then risk his value going lower if he gets hurt? But, you know, the Nets have talked about when the season ended about trying to erase a lot of this drama and move on from this and get back to their roots that made this place attractive to stars in the first place. Isn't carrying this into the year, you know, kind of going against what you said you were trying to avoid? That's why this is such an impossible situation, it feels like, right now.
With Alex Schiffer of The Athletic on this Kevin Durant news, I feel for Steve Nash. I've been saying this, you know, all year. I don't know if he can coach at all, but I think Durant and Kyrie kind of dragged him into the situation. He gave it a shot. He's trying to pull a Steve Kerr. We know how this is playing out. And now Durant is completely throwing him under the bus. How do you expect Steve Nash to respond?
Yeah, I mean, in his dealings with us, you know, Steve doesn't, you know, when he took the job in the James Harden rumors of front and center, he talked about, you know, the elephant in the room, we leave the elephant be. And I think that's how he will try and play this whenever we talk to him again. But I do think that there needs to be some acknowledgement of some capacity. You know, they had a great relationship. Kevin stuck up for him throughout the past 2 years. And now here we are. It's kind of tough to turn a blind eye to all that or act like, you know, the dog in the burning house gift where everything's fine. So that's why it's going to be interesting to see how Steve responds. You know, it's in his nature to try to avoid the controversy and try to avoid the hot topic of the media day. But again, like this is personal. You know, he called for your job. And Steve Nash is one of the toughest players, as we know, in NBA history. The shots he took, he got a tooth knocked out by Karl Malone. Like, to me, it kind of goes against his grain, his DNA as a player to just kind of brush this off. You know what I mean? So I'm curious to see how Steve handles this next time we get to talk to him.
Well, Alex, you outlined how, you know, Joe Tsai, the owner of the Nets, is a business partner of Nash's and presumably a friend. But you can't deny some of the, you know, some of the side eye that's been given to Nash by the team. And, you know, you had Cam Thomas, the second year guard, kind of have that eye rolling moment when Nash's name was mentioned at Summer League. You've had Nash get out coached by Ime Udoka in the opening round of the playoffs and the Nets get swept. You've had Kyrie Irving say a couple of years ago, we don't even need a coach. I could coach. KD could coach. I mean, what do you think the perception of Steve Nash is in that locker room?
Yeah, you know, it's been an interesting time for him because, as you said, I mean, I've said to people, because Steve has only had his full roster, you know, he had the big three with James Harden, Kyrie, and Kevin for like less than 20 games. I've said at times the jury's still out with him as a coach because we've never got to see them as a full unit, and including with Ben Simmons. But, you know, during the COVID outbreaks when they had made, you know, Blake Griffin at one point was their offensive focal point during some of those games, that they were having guys play and join them that, you know, signed a 10-day that morning. And they were playing hard for Steve and really buying into what he was preaching. And I thought that was a pretty good sign that, you know, his voice still carried despite the crazy of circumstances. But as you said, I mean, the Boston series, I thought there were minimal adjustments, and Ime Udoka, who was the Nets' backup option to hire Kenny Atkinson in 2016, you know, cleaned their clock. So I do think, and he has a new coaching staff. We'll see if there could be some new changes. There's talks of a new system and everything, but I don't look at the Cam Thomas thing as much. That was everybody and their mother telling him he needs to pass more, and I think that was the first time he maybe got uncomfortable with the media, and it got to him a little bit that everybody was kind of pointing out maybe a flaw in his game. But it's definitely been weird where his voice has been able to carry at times, and then in the postseason, you know, it hasn't resonated as much, which is obviously when you need it the most. So that's why, you know, he only has 2 years left of his deal. Do we see a second contract for him after this? Does he just pack it in? It's been such a weird dynamic for him since he took this job. I really kind of wonder if he's just kind of riding this out, and then we'll see him go back to something else or just go back into retirement.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me at all. Great stuff as always. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Alex Schiffer of The Athletic down in Brooklyn. Yeah, Steve Nash had made it clear he's only going to coach if he's coaching a contending team. Well, He got a dysfunctional team is what he got.
Yeah.
They're not contending, and who knows what they're going to be. If KD goes, Kyrie, like that story, because Kevin Durant, the oxygen is all being directed towards him. Kyrie opted in. He's going to be a camp. You know,
yeah.
Ben Simmons is returning to our lives. I don't know what to expect on that front, but – man, Brooklyn's been churning out content. They just don't churn out any success.
It's great for summer radio, hey?
Issue.
Like, the Brooklyn Nets have been so good for us as far as talking about stuff this summer.
When anything dies down, KD will save you, right? Like, that's
that's exactly it.
KD does it, man. LeBron does it. Like, that's the story of those the two, you know, main characters of the last 15 years in the NBA. You might include Steph Curry in that. But it's LeBron, Durant, social media, jumping around.
Yeah.
Reports of unhappiness, you know.
Yeah.
It's a soap opera with these two guys.
Is Stephen A going to be on TV at some point in the next day or two? I would love to see what he's saying about this.
I think he's got a bad wing, doesn't he? Didn't he, like, his shoulder out or have shoulder surgery?
Yes. That's a shame because I feel like this would be just, like, primetime Stephen A.
Yes.
Just go berserk.
Well, it's another example of Kevin Durant picked Steve Nash, and now he hates
kidding.
Steve Nash.
Yeah.
It's like, make up your mind, man. Like, one way or the other, make up your mind. It's just such a lack of maturity all the time with KD. Always.
It really is. But the problem is, Hayes, the players have the power here. The
right.
Players have the leverage. The four-year deal, it doesn't matter if he's got 4 years remaining on his deal. Do you actually, if you're the owner of that club, do you actually have the nerve to say, now just show up to camp, buddy, and play basketball like I'm paying you to play basketball? Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's going to go for you if you're Joseph Tsai.
Well, like, the fact that you can get to sit down with the owner says a lot. Like, there are a lot of other athletes in other sports where if you're a malcontent, the owner's like, I'm not coming to see you.
Well, you're not the guy. Like, that's not the guy you go see.
Go see the GM. I pay people to deal with this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
All right, we'll come back with our best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Jays in action tonight in Baltimore. 15 of their final 58 games are against the Orioles. Big one starting down at Camden Yards tonight. We'll tee that up next.
Don't sweat the technique.
All right, so the Philadelphia Phillies were celebrating their 1980 World Series. I think it was supposed to happen probably during COVID or whatever. And anyway, they had asked the commissioner, can we invite Pete Rose? Can Pete come up from Vegas? He's going to put the pen down, stop signing stuff at the MGM, and which is the most awkward scene ever. I've been at the MGM a couple times in Vegas, walked by, there's Pete Rose in his flat brim, you know, signing whatever people put on the table.
Yeah.
But old Pete makes his way up to Philly, and naturally the broadcast is like, we got to get Pete Rose in. Like, Pete Rose was doing panel work. Was it for Fox? Like, 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a history, and he's a guy that will speak his mind, clearly, Pete Rose. Here's a little taste of how quickly it went sideways. Now, we had to censor these clips. They did not censor it live on the air during the game. And here's Pete Rose in the booth talking about some of his own stories back in the day.
Joe said, Tony, congratulations. What did you hit? And Tony says, Joe, I hit a high fastball. And Joe didn't know what to say. Joe said, no.
That's looped out to right field.
You change the subject real quick on that loop out to right field.
I'm just describing the action. I'm
pretty sure we don't have a 7-second delay, so.
Ooh.
Yeah. No delay. That's the C word off the top, the S word off the back. And I love the – that one's looped out to right field. Like, that is the director in the truck saying, tell him to stop, please.
Oh, my.
Who made the decision to put Pete Rose in the booth?
He calls it out, too, eh? Like, oh, you changed the subject. Like, no, oh, yeah. Pete. Like, I got to tell the viewer what just happened in the
right.
game.
There literally was just a, you know, a hit to right field. But thank you, Pete. Like, thank you for telling the tricks of the trade here. And it went on and on. I mean, Pete Rose, he's a fascinating figure. I will say that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Pete Rose got to be one of the 10 or 15 most fascinating sports figures of the last 50 years, I would say.
He really is. And he had a tough weekend because he got into another tete-a-tete with a woman reporter who asked him about, you know, a case that he was accused of statutory rape, and he was condescending and called this reporter babe and had to apologize for that. And it was a debacle of a weekend for Pete Rose.
Pete Rose. Just stay in Vegas, Pete. Like, you know, just get down there. Doesn't OJ live in Vegas? Not that Pete Rose is OJ, but it's like, just get to Vegas, stay in Vegas. Old Pete Rose, you know, in Philly doing his thing. Anyway, the Jays are in action tonight in Baltimore. And 15 of the next 58, 15 of the last 58 are against Baltimore. We had Phillips on earlier, and Steve believes this is a good thing for the Jays. He thinks that the Baltimore Orioles are playing well above their weight class right now. Yes, they've been hot. Credit to them. They're above 500. And I tend to lean towards where Phillips is at. But this is probably going to make or break, certainly the Orioles season, how they fare against the Jays. And ultimately, it will likely factor into where the Jays end up in terms of a wild card position because, you know, if you take advantage of these games, then and you're going to have to because Seattle and Tampa are right on your tail. Right, Cleveland's going to be right behind you. If you struggle over the course of 15 games against anybody, that's going to factor into what happens in the wild card race.
Yeah, it could be one of those things where if the Jays have Baltimore's number and they're just, you know, like they're just getting win after win after win, it's like Baltimore can't figure out the Jays. Like, it's going to be great for them, or it could be the other way.
Yeah, you go 8-7, right. You know, that's you better make up ground elsewhere.
Yeah,
you're going to have to.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, but you can't take like I think. You know, in the past, you've taken this team lightly, right? They've been a bit of a laughingstock. And maybe they've been playing over their heads, or maybe they just really found a little bit of that, you know, the Rays-like underdog magic where you got a bunch of guys who are essentially nobodies trying to make their way in the game, and it's all clicking for them. And that's a scary proposition for a team that's got playoff expectations like the Blue Jays.
Right. When it starts feeling like destiny, that can absolutely start to snowball. Today's Best Bets brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Yusei Kikuchi on the mound. I'm on the over in the +4.5 strikeouts tonight. I mean, he may walk four guys, but I think he will strike out 5+. You know, they're coming off a 4-game series in Mini. He's going to have to pitch. They're going to give him his innings. He's going to go 2 times through the order. I believe, you know, he's looked decent in terms of control, in terms of throwing strikes. I'll go over tonight. Vladdy Guerrero Jr., I just saw this stat. The Jays just posted this. He's on a career-high 18-game hit streak right now, which is the longest active hit streak in the majors. During that run, he's hitting .411. He's got an 1,100 OPS, and he has 180 hard-hit balls. That is also an MLB high. You're getting plus money on two hits tonight for Vladdy. It's dangerous. You know, two plus hits any given night is not a guarantee for sure, but you're getting plus 140. I'll play it. And I'm on the Mets on the run line at home against the Reds. The Mets are feeling it. They're coming off three straight against the Braves. Cincinnati's awful. You got Bassett on the mound. Paying a little juice on the run line, but I like the Mets tonight down at Citi Field. Today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. So, yeah, you got Kikuchi tonight, Manoah tomorrow, Barrios on Wednesday. But we haven't talked a lot about Barrios because everything that happened Saturday and Sunday. But, man, he got rocked.
No, Yeah, it's a good thing Gausman's pitching well. AL Player of the Week.
That's right.
And he had a big week.
Big week. Two straight starts, no earned, 14 innings. That's what sticks out now is that he went 14 innings over two starts.
Yeah.
Isn't that a sign where baseball's at?
15 strikeouts.
Yeah, he's been lights out, man. He's been lights out. He's been great. Manoah's been great. They need Barrios. They need him to be consistent. It has to happen. All right, boys. Great seeing you guys. Frankie, I think we'll see you maybe later in the week, I hope.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. There's Frankie Corrado. Dave, you're back in here tomorrow.
Looking forward to it.
We will see you. Andy Petrillo will be hanging around with us, as always. So we are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.